Hi, and welcome to Aging in Place for every stage in life. What if you could visit or have a home that would accommodate anyone at any age, any physical ability, at any time? How cool would that be? That's what we're doing here at Aging in Place. Why me? Because I'm a doctor of psychology, and I specialize in physical spaces and health and wellness. Also, I love designing with intent at any age. Why now? Because we, the baby boomers, want to age in place gracefully, and we want our families around us as much as we can. And why you, the audience? Because we want you to experience what it's like to have a home that's safe, aesthetically pleasing, and that you can live in at any age, with any ability, at any time. I'd like to introduce you now to Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life. Hi, and welcome to Aging in Place podcast. We are so excited to have as our guest today, Wanda Gotz. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm really excited to talk to you, Wanda, today. You have been a teacher and a mentor to me. And what I'd like to do is ask you a little bit about CAPS certification and what a CAPS designer, architect, occupational therapist, physical therapist does.
Well, a person that's a certified aging in place specialist really helps people with home modifications. They basically do an assessment to determine is the home adaptable to a person's need as they change over time. And then they provide design solutions, and they also implement those design solutions to create an environment that provides ease of use, comfort, safety, and beauty.
One of the things that you and I talked about and that you taught me early on was that when we talk about aging in place, creating a home for is really creating a home for anyone at any age and any stage of life. And that it doesn't serve any of us well if we limit what we talk about in certified aging in place, if we just put the seniors as a group. It's really about anyone. Can you talk a little bit about what CAPS, you sort of gave us a broad spectrum specifically from the course. What are we going to learn?
Well, we're going to learn specifically that there are three segments of the market. There's those people that are just aging and they're perfectly healthy. I'm 70 years old. I'm aging. I have no immediate needs, but my environment is such that should something happen to me in the future, I can adapt. My environment adapts to my need. An example would be, for example, I have arthritis. Okay. And so I have arthritis in my right hand. I broke my hand. So now it's a little harder for me to open my doorknob. So what I did do is I adapted my environment by changing it to a lever handle, which allows me to use my forearm instead of my hand. And it provides me still ease of use, and I still can get into my home comfortably. So that is what I'm coming to the table to be able to assess that that's what you need in your home. So therefore, regardless of who comes to your home, whether it's your grandma or your children or your grandchildren, they can easily get into your home regardless of their condition, their age, or their ability.
You know, when I remember sitting in the class and being very familiar with ADA and universal design, but not realizing how all-encompassing it is for living any place at any time. Can you talk to me a little bit about universal design?
So universal design is basically the fundamental principle that allow comfort, safety, ease of use, and accessibility, regardless of what the person's ability to do that. An example of that would be, I want something that is accessible to everyone. If I have a 36-inch door, it is accessible, meaning everyone can walk through that door. If I'm walking with a walker, I can get through the door. If I have a scooter, I can get through the door. If I have a stroller, I can get through the door. So it's equitable and it provides access to everyone. So if I put the door in there, the door is equitable, it's universal, and it's accessible. Regardless of my ability, my age, or what I'm doing, it allows me through the doorway. So that's a principle. Another principle would be, for example, ease of use or perceptible information. So something that does the task for you. If I have a touch faucet, then okay. that does the task for me. It automatically is intuitive and it does the task for me. So whether I do the task or the task is done for me, it allows me, regardless of what my ability is, it allows me to still perform the task of washing my hand. Perfect example is, we all know that we go to the bathroom right. in Publix.
Right.
In Publix, you go to the bathroom, you sit on the toilet, it automatically flushes. You stand up, you go to the faucet, you stick your hands underneath it, the faucet automatically comes on and washes your hands. Then I go to the dryer and it blow dries my hands and it dries it. So that allows me the ability, regardless of who is using it, it's universal because everyone can use it. But if I have a disability, I still can use that product, meaning I still can get my hands washed because something is helping me in order to do that. And those kinds of products that are intuitive
yes.
are going to be the things that are going to allow people to remain in their home. An example would be the lights automatically come on in my house. That's a safety and security issue. That's a universal design feature because that's intuitive. The lights automatically come on. So regardless if I have macular degeneration or I can't see or I can't hear, the task is being basically performed for me. So if we use those principles in designing or creating our environment that way, it doesn't matter who comes to see me. It doesn't matter how old they are. It doesn't matter what their limitations are. They still can be able to be what? Functional and get the job done, which means, and our activities of daily living, which is going to the bathroom
right.
and care
Shower.
Of our personal needs mm-hmm. and feeding ourselves. Those are the activities of daily living. So we want that to be safe, secure, functional, and accessible.
Do you think, since you've started the CAPS course and just known more and more about universal design and accessibility, things have changed? Is the whole industry broadening? And since now there are many of us who are aging, we want to age in place, we all have grandchildren, we want our grandkids to be able to come and visit. Have things changed over time?
No. Well, what happens is now we're designing. The clear distinction is, our bodies are changing over time. Is our environment changing? So we have to adapt our environment so that as we change over time, we can still be able to function in it. So what's happening? So right now, the reason we're modifying homes is because our bodies are changing. And so we want the environment to be able to do that. So if I'm doing a modification, I'm going to look at those things that are allow me to do that. Do I need to have, I need to get into the bathroom. So mm-hmm. I need to have a wide enough doorway. The trend right now is for a wet room. We want as much space in the bathroom as possible for accessibility, regardless of whether we're walking in there, whether we're in a wheelchair, we're in a walker, or we're bringing the dog in for a bath, or we're bringing our grandchild in. We want as much space as possible. So we're creating a bathroom that has no walls in it. It just has the basic structure. And the whole room is accessible to me. So I have a shower head that moves up and down. I have a faucet that I can easily touch and be able to stick my hands under.
Uh-huh.
I have grab bars that give me stability and security while I'm navigating in that shower. So all of that is changing. What is changing are the products. They're becoming a lot more friendlier and
yes.
a lot more aesthetically pleasing. So what is changing is the products are there and they have been there. We're moving them from institutional like to what? To aesthetically pleasing because it's now our home and we want our environment to be beautiful.
One of the things that you pride yourself on and one of the things that I think you're internationally known for is being able to walk into a home and really help people assess ways that they can make their home more visitable, if that's the right word for that. When you walk through a home, can you give us just an example of you walk in or you drive into the driveway? What kinds of things are you looking for?
We start at the curb and I'm looking for access. I need to be able to get into my home. So
okay.
it starts at the curb. It starts, egress starts at the curb. I'm looking at what obstacles, where, how am I getting in? Am I traveling? Am I getting in there through the garage? Am I getting in there from the front stairs? And what are the travel paths? So my travel path is important. Do I have to step up, you know, get from the garage into the house? So that is an obstacle. So what do I have to do there? If I am in the house and now I have to walk up a flight of stairs, that is an obstacle because now I have something in my travel path that's stopping me. So I'm looking at that travel path. Do I have a 42-inch width that allows me a travel path that allows me? Now, since we have an open space plan and most people's homes are open, right, we use furniture for that travel path. So do I have enough space between the couch and the counter so that I could pass for it safely? So that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking, how am I walking through that environment easily with a minimum amount of effort?
All right. I tell you what, you're amazing. And this is why she's so fascinating to listen to. She's such a wealth of information. Wanda, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come right back. We're going to talk a little bit more about aging in place. Stay with us. Hi, I'm Dr. Debbie Lines. Design elements are psychologically and physically supportive and conducive to health and wellness. To learn more about what Lines on Design can do for you, for more information on certified aging in place and facilitative and supportive design, look for us at linesondesign.com. That's L-Y-N-E-S on design.com.
Hi, I'm Henrik, the producer of Aging in Place podcast. If you'd like more information and transcripts of this podcast, visit agingInPlacePodcast.com. And now, back to Debbie Lines with the next segment of Aging in Place podcast for every stage in life.
We are back here on Aging in Place. We are again here with Wanda Gotz. Good to see you again. It's amazing to talk with you. You are such a fountain of knowledge, and you make it really user-friendly, which is great for many of us. I don't care. You know, I've got a 91-year-old dad and a 2-year-old granddaughter, and I think when they can visit the house and everybody's safe, I feel much more comfortable. You were taking us a walk through a home and really showing us some things that we can pay attention to. The takeaway, or what I really heard from you, was from the beginning, okay, when you drive up to a house, that's where you really start paying attention to aging in place and making your home universally designed.
So what I'm going to say is the other issue is our population is going to be basically the female because we outlive men by 10 years. And so what women look for is security.
Okay.
And so security starts at the outside of the house. Approach of you. Somebody comes to my front door. I live in Florida. Code basically requires that our doors open out to deal with the hurricane. So okay, when the door opens out and someone knocks on my door, I have to step outside and then look behind the door to see who's there. Well, that's a security issue and a safety issue.
Wow.
If I live by myself, I want to be able to be safe. I want to know who's on that other side of the door before I answer the door, not after I open the door.
I never thought about that.
Yeah, and that's a big issue. And I do it every day because somebody knocks on my door. I have to step out the door and I have to look behind the door. So to me, that's a safety issue. So what I want to do is, what is going to enhance security and safety for me? A perfect example, Ring phone. Ring phone is the ability to be able to have communication directly through. So I apply it on my, if I have an iPhone or a phone, it's an application. And okay, it's a product on the outside. You do not have to have an electrical connection. You put it on the outside and it's a camera. So it has 360 degree view in front of me around my environment. So it looks down my corridor and up my corridor. Ring, R-I-N-G, ring,
okay, phone. Okay.
I mount it to the outside of my house and there's a camera inside. And that camera, when somebody approaches, it automatically is being able to see me from a range back here. And the security issue is that you can add a light on top. So lighting is a security issue. If I have a light above my doorway and someone approaches me, immediately I can see who's coming to my home. Now with Ring phone, somebody knocks on my door, I automatically see them in my phone. And I don't have to open the door because I'm looking in my phone to communicate. Hi, how are you, Debbie? Hi, Wanda, how are you? Oh, hi, Debbie. Thank you for coming over. Let me open the door for you. If I don't know who's at the door, I can say, may I help you?
Got it.
And so I have to open the door in order to see who's at my door. So that's a security and safety issue. And for under $100, maybe it costs $100 to get the combination of the phone and the light, immediately safety and security is addressed. And I feel much more comfortable whether it's nighttime or daytime when somebody's at my door. One feature is now if your dad, you're away, I go to my son's house. He says, Mom, let me know when you come to my house, I'll open the door. Or you can give this feature to someone else. And then so your dad, if he lived in another house, he can give you access. So whoever comes to the door, you can see who's coming to dad's door.
What's interesting is I was thinking about my daughter who has a 2-year-old and is pregnant with another one. And I think, I mean, we're saying security, but it's just convenience too. It would be a wonderful feature for her to be able to know, again, if she needed to really come to the door or not.
That's right. And if she's in another room feeding the baby, she can keep the phone there and she doesn't have to get up to go see the door. Somebody's right there. She has access to it from her. So convenience, ease of use, comfort, and safety are the features. Security and safety is what the Ring phone basically provides. And I recommend that to everyone, especially to women.
Well, it's so much fun to talk about product because I think at the end of every one of our podcasts, what we try to do is we do takeaways, practical things that people can actually do when they finish. And this is exactly what we're looking for. I'm surprised when you consider or when you share lighting as an area of safety and security until you mentioned the light at the front door. Are there other things that are safety and security we really wouldn't think about?
The number one feature for safety is lighting. I say that what we have to do is change our lighting. Lighting provides safety and security. Right now, we grew up on Thomas Edison created the light bulb. It is yellow light. As we age, our eyes turn yellow. So what we need is we need blue light. LED light is the light that we need that provides security and safety. If we increase lighting, automatically we increase security and safety. So where do you need that additional lighting?
Right, exactly.
In transition areas and at places. So we need direct light for a thing. We need task light. So I'm working at the counter. I want that light there. And then I need lighting that's going to provide me the ability to be able to see what I'm doing in that particular task.
Let me ask you another question about lighting. Oftentimes turning on lamps, turning off lamps. I know for my dad, it's oftentimes a hassle to move around and turn off all of these individual things. Are there products out there to make that easier also?
Yes, you can have an app from your phone. You got Alexa. You talk to Alexa, say, Alexa, turn on the lights. Alexa, shut off the lights. Alexa, tell me what time it is. So you can use that as a feature or component that helps you with those features.
So from a certified aging in place point of view, tell me who would actually do that for you? Do you look for people who are certified in that?
You're going to look for an interior designer. You're going to look for a contractor that's got CAP certified. And you can check by going to the National Home Builders Association to their website and to put in CAPs. And then you can find the people in your local area that are certified. Because they're the people that understand what you really need to have in your home.
What about things like bars, counters? How do I determine the height of counters? And how do I, again, be proactive when I'm either renovating my house or building a new house to prepare for aging in place?
Well, you're going to have a professional. Then you would want an interior designer that understands what the difference is, or you want a contractor that's CAP certified because they understand how to be able to determine what kind of counter you need, what's your reach, how far you can reach, how far you can lift. So they're trained in basically doing that.
You know, when cost is no object, I think, ooh, I'd like to put an elevator in, or I'd like to do things like that. Are there cost-effective ways to begin to retrofit, if you will, my home, or when I'm building? Are there ways to just develop a master plan and I can do it over time?
Yeah, and that would be, again, meeting with an interior designer or a CAP certified professional, because they are going to plan that space for you and how to best economize to get all of that. You know, for an elevator, you require certain things. For a lift, you require certain things. And they're the experts that know all of the things. So I would probably say they need to do an assessment. So when they do an assessment, that's where they evaluate what you can do in that space.
And so that's what you were basically telling us when we went in through the front, and then we went in and furniture was something that we talked about travel. What about going into the kitchen? Talk a little bit about the kitchen.
Well, the kitchen is the same way. Activity of daily living. What are you doing in the kitchen? You have to feed yourself. You have to wash the dishes. You have to cook. And you have to clean up after yourself. So you're looking at the activity that the person is doing and how are they basically doing it. And everybody's different.
Well, but from an accessibility point of view, what are some tips that you could give us about what we need to pay attention to within the kitchen area?
So in the kitchen, again, access, cooking, the stovetop. You need to make sure that the stovetop is safe and secure. So the big thing is induction stovetops are really, that's great for aging in place because it runs on magnetic energy. So if something is, you remove the, if you're cooking in a pot and the water boils out, the stovetop automatically shuts itself off.
If you
take the top pot off and you touch the stovetop is immediately cold. Mm-hmm. So for aging in place, that's a perfect stovetop because I already have left my stovetop on twice while I was cooking, and I'm thinking, I could burn down the building. This is a good thing.
I did the same thing. I popped popcorn and walked out of the room. Oops.
Yeah.
Very
blow up. Yeah.
Right. Not good.
So you can basically do that. Yes.
What about if I do have my dad or someone in a wheelchair, if a cousin just recently broke her leg and we were trying to figure out how to get her in and sit at, you know, come into the kitchen and sit at the counter.
You would want a multi-level counter. So she needs access. So if you had a multi-level counter of two different heights, she can easily come with her chair and sit at the counter. So the design right now, everybody wants an island. Everybody wants an island. That's
right.
The trend. Well, in an island, you want to put multi-level in it because regardless of whether your granddaughter's going to come and stand at it or somebody's going to come in a chair and sit at it in a wheelchair, they're going to have access to what? To be able to eat at the counter. So that multi-level counter gives you the ability to do that.
It makes so much sense. What is the difference, Wanda, between a lift and an elevator? And if I'm not ready for an elevator or it's cost prohibitive right now, is there anything in pre-planning that I can do to be able to put an elevator in at some point?
The issue is that we have a lot of types of elevators.
Okay.
Elevator is known as a pneumatic elevator. It's a vacuum elevator. So, you know, like you go to the bank and you put your money in and it goes up a tube.
So
that's called vacuum. That's called the vacuum. So that doesn't require anything other than plug and play, but you have to have some place to put it. That would be great in front of a stairwell. If you had a winding stair or you had a stairwell or a loft,
yes.
You can have a pneumatic elevator because it could go from one level to the other. The issue is it only requires electrical outlet. It requires a battery back. And a thing, cost you $16,000, $17,000. That's the fastest one that you can get overnight to your house if you had an issue. It has some requirements. Some of them are not wheelchair accessible, meaning the wheelchair, they're creating them so they're wheelchair accessible.
Okay.
But you can get from one level to the other. The elevator is a little bit more complicated because that requires planning. And that requires where is the space that you have in order to basically do that.
So let's say I'm building a new house and I want to plan for an elevator because I'm going to have little kids and I'm also going to have aging parents. Is there anything I can do to plan for it?
Yes. And you're planning in a new house, you would want to put double stack closets next to the stairwell. Those double stack closets are for a future shaft that you're going to put the elevator in. Then you have to really know what kind of elevator you're going to put in. Do you need an elevator pit? You need to have your electrical. You have to have your battery backup. You have to have your telephone. You have to have your walls reinforced. So there's certain things that the designer or the builder can help you in that planning when you can decide what kind of money you want to spend on that elevator and how much is it going to cost you.
What's a lift?
A lift is basically the same thing, but it's used for short distances. It's shorter. It only takes one person at a time, and it has a limitation of 500 pounds. So it requires a flat surface. So they're used. So you'll see lifts basically in older buildings where they had garages and they had transitions.
Yes.
It's only used for one person, but it will fit. It's used instead of a ramp. A lift can be used in a garage because you can put it where the stoop is, and then the person can transfer. But it has limitations. It only holds up to 500 pounds, according to the equipment and the person. It requires that you have somebody's holding a button to move from place to place. But it's a mini elevator
Got
for a short distance. But it serves the purpose, and it replaces a ramp very, very economically.
Talk to me a little bit about ramps, if you will. Can anyone build a ramp anywhere at any time? Are there specs, or are there things we really have to pay attention to? Talk to me about that.
Well, a ramp has got an issue because the ramp has to comply with local code, building code, and ramps are. A ramp has to be able to be accessible. It has to be at least 36 inches high. You have to have a travel path, and you have to have a surface, and you have to show transition. So a lot of people make mistakes on ramps. I would say that you would want to talk to a professional to make sure that you're compliant when doing a ramp. You can also buy a portable ramp. Mobility 101 is a big manufacturer. They sell portable products. You can buy a portable ramp to use it for a short-term basis. That would probably be sometimes more economical than building a ramp. And ramps can also be built. Like, I see a ramp down my street that's on the side of a garage, and it goes from the street to the garage. So a ramp can be very simple. If it's at the ratio of 1 to 20, it means it's pretty flat and pretty slowly steep, so you don't have to have rails on the side of it. So those are accessible there. So so that ramp doesn't require that a person have that has ramps, that it has railing on it, because it's sloped gradually, so you're not going to fall off of anything.
Wow, there's just so much to know. Are ramps pretty much standard in most commercial buildings now? Are they required?
Yes, under American Disabilities Act, any commercial building requires to have a ramp.
You know, we're talking about wheelchairs, and we're talking about children, and we're talking about those kinds of disabilities. I'm just now thinking blind, lack of vision, hearing, some of the other senses. Is there anything specifically or interesting about aging in place when your sight goes?
Oh, yeah.
I see that with myself as I get older.
Well, then we use other tactical. So if we can't see, we need to hear. If we can't hear, we need to see. So we have to use all the other senses. So we bring all the other senses to the table when we're designing.
Give me examples of that, of what that would look like.
So if I can't hear, I need to see. So I would need color contrast, which would help me with showing where the differential. At the end of a hallway, it's going to say, uh-oh, something's happening. If I can't see, I need audio, so something to tell me. So that could be a command, or it could be a tone, or it could be a voice. That's going to basically, intercom is the thing that people use. So they need, if they can't hear, they can see. So you can have a camera that's there, and they can visually see who's on the other side of the door or who's going through the door. So that would be a way to accommodate them.
What about color? Do you find that as we get older, we need softer color, brighter color?
Color is the biggest thing that we need, color contrast. As we lose the ability for depth perception, and we need color contrast. So the darker colors are harder for the eye to see, lighter colors are better. But we need contrast between what a surface and the floor, or the surface and product. So surface that we need immediately.
We've only got about a minute or so. And you pretty much have a mantra about what certified aging in place certification really looks like. It's safety. Give me your
security.
Safety,
security, ease of use, and comfort.
Safety, security, ease of use, and comfort.
And then I add beauty, because everyone wants their environment.
Yes, that's the design. Safety, security, ease of use,
and comfort.
That makes so much sense. Again, I keep saying it, but I can't say it enough. You're a wealth of knowledge. And I think what we did today on this podcast is really just scratch the surface of what and how a certified aging in place specialist can really enhance your living space. And again, it's all about health and wellness. So I am very, very grateful to you. And I want to thank all of our listeners too. And Wanda, we will definitely have you back here on Aging in Place, the podcast.
And if anybody's interested in classes, they can just go to my website, goldenageliving.com, and undergo course schedule, and they can find out where the courses are listed and available.
You are amazing. Again, thank you so much for joining us. I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine, Tracy. Tracy is naturally curious and always creative. And when we were doing the Aging in Place podcast, she said, there are so many quick tips that I can think of offhand. My response, who knew? She's going to be with us every week, giving us a quick tip and a hint that is a practical application.
Thanks, Debbie. Time for a 60-second makeover. Thanks to online shopping, you now can do a little makeover for your home with just a couple of clicks. Have that doorway that has a little step up to cross. With someone using a walker, those door jams can be a fall waiting to happen. What to do? A popular online shopping website sells rubber thresholds in many sizes. A rubber threshold will prevent walkers or wheelchairs from hitting that bump in the road. Prices usually start around $30. It's an easy fix for a big problem. Who knew?
Wow, Wanda Gotts, a certified aging in place specialist. She gave us so many takeaways. The entire podcast is a takeaway, to tell you the truth, because there are so many practical tips. But here's the bottom line and the takeaway I hope you all get. And that is, when it comes to aging in place at any stage in life, it's about safety, it's about security, it's about ease, and it's about comfort. Thank you all for joining us here on Aging in Place.
Aging in Place podcast is hosted by Debbie Lyons and produced by Henrik de Gior. If you have any comments or questions, send an email to debbie@agingInPlacePodcast.com. We would love to hear from you. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring this podcast, email us at pr@agingInPlacePodcast.com. Thank you for listening to Aging in Place podcast.